Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
If you missed our show this morning, Mornings with the Coach, here's what you missed.
Coach is not here. Coach is hopefully sleeping because that's what we should be doing, but we're not. We're here to talk some sports. How's it going, everybody? Derek Togerson from NBC7 with AJ Cassavell from MLB.com. We had so much fun yesterday. We're going to do this again today. AJ, how you feeling today?
Good. Happy Naylor Day.
Happy Naylor Day. Josh Naylor is coming up today. That's going to be a big topic of conversation around Padre land and, of course, a big topic of conversation for us here on the morning show on 97.3 The Fan. Hey, give us a call, 833-288-0973, 833-288-0973. Coming up in the next 4 hours, all around about, we're going to talk to Jim Callis, run an interview we had with him yesterday. Always great to talk to that guy about Padres prospects. We're going to talk to Buck Martinez, the Blue Jays announcer and former manager of the World Baseball Classic for Team USA. He had Jake Peavy on that team. We'll talk to him and get a Blue Jays primer for this weekend series coming up in the 6 o'clock hour. In the 7 o'clock hour, we're going to talk a lot about the NBA playoffs. And I'm not sure we'll actually talk about what happened on the floor during the NBA playoffs. We're going to talk something about the NBA playoffs because there's a whole bunch of random nonsense going on, and I'm going to be the old guy in the room, I know. At the 8 o'clock hour, a couple of really good interviews. Sean Wright Phillip. Manchester Cup. The Man Cup is Man City Cup is coming to Oceanside. Huge, like 500 soccer teams from all around the world. They're going to be here. So we're going to talk to him, get a soccer primer, and then Skip Schumacher on our Padres Friday is going to be in the coming in about 8:40. We're going to get him talking about the Padres and the Padres outfield. And AJ, as you said, happy Naylor Day. Josh Naylor is coming up. He's going to make his big league debut. We touched on this yesterday. How cool would it be for the guy who's from Canada, he's from Ontario, to get in, and his major league debut is going to be in Toronto. You picked it, my friend. How cool is this for him?
Yeah, it's a really cool story. I think maybe for the Padres, it's as exciting that they have this guy coming up as it is for the fact that he's getting called up in Toronto. I know he's their number 9 ranked prospect or wherever we have him, not necessarily at the top of the list. But this Padres team right now needs left-handed hitting, and it needs guys who are patient and can reach base. And it's playing a week in the American League where they won't necessarily have to worry about defense. And this fit could not be any better at this time. Josh Naylor is all of those things. He's a very good left-handed hitter. I think he maybe at the end of last season was already a major league hitter, and he didn't necessarily have a spot to play defensively. The Padres outfield already might be shaky. I think if you throw him out there, it takes a hit.
Okay, let's get that in a second, because I think we're both terrified of what might happen to that pitching staff if you have the certain outfield alignment and thinking that they might have moving forward. Offensively, you know they need a left-handed hitter with power. They thought they had that in Franchy Cordero. Franchy hasn't been able to stay healthy so far. They brought up Alex Dickerson. They thought he might be able to give him some pop based on what he was doing down in AAA. Alex hasn't been able to give him that kind of pop right now. So Josh Naylor, does he now have the right of first refusal on being that left-handed bat who gives you some pop in this lineup, aside from Eric Hosmer, of course, who's swinging the bat a lot better this year than last year? And is it as simple as if Josh Naylor hits, Josh Naylor stays for as long as he hits?
That's the fun part of this, because we really don't know. This isn't, you're here for a week. You're playing in 3 games in Toronto, you're playing 3 games in New York, and then that's it. I think he really legitimately has a chance, if he performs, to stay. And if he stays, then it's, how do you get him playing time? If he's hitting, well, why not sprinkle him into that outfield? Why not give him some reps against right-handed pitching and maybe take some at-bats away from Renfro? I know Renfro's been very, very good, but he obviously has some platoon-heavy splits, and there's just a place for guys who can hit. My issue with Naylor is he's still young, and there is still an added benefit to getting him regular at-bats
21 years old,
in
right?
The minor leagues. So come next Wednesday, if he's hit a couple bombs and he's driving in runs and he's kind of filling in that sixth spot in the lineup that hasn't been filled very well for the Padres all season, I think he sticks around at least as long as he's getting regular enough playing time, and they might be able to find that for him.
Well, Josh Naylor is still the highest drafted Canadian position player in the history of the Major League Draft. That means he's better than Joey Votto, right?
I wouldn't go that far.
He's never going to leave the lineup. He is better than Joey Votto.
I wouldn't go that far, obviously, but he has some of the same. I'm not going to compare him to Joey Votto because he's not on par defensively or whatever. But in terms of the way he sees pitches, he's really, really good at that.
Yes.
And you notice that just from watching him kind of in the mix of all these Padres hitters who slug really well but don't necessarily take a lot of walks. He is on the other end of the spectrum where maybe you'd like to see him unleash a few more swings, but you're not going to change that right now because he is so solid at reaching base. And the number one issue the Padres have had, and I don't think it's even close in the last half decade, is getting guys on base. Because if you look at the last 3 years, their home runs have ticked up. They have guys who can hit for doubles, hit the ball in the gap, hit the ball out of the ballpark. They haven't gotten on base enough. They're at the bottom. That, to me, at least, that's maybe the most important number on a baseball card is on base percentage. And the Padres have finished last in the league 5 years in a row, and the only reason they're not last in the league this year is because there are a few teams that are really, really bad, even though the Padres' numbers are lower than what they've been. Now, that being said, they've played in some pitcher's parks. They on base percentage and just general offensive numbers in particular tend to go up as the season goes on. But right now, the Padres' on-base percentage is not good enough. Their left-handed bats are not good enough. So when they're facing right-handed pitchers, they have a little bit of an issue. And Josh Naylor solves those issues, and they're facing three righties in Toronto this weekend. I haven't looked far ahead enough to New York, but they have some righties too. It fits. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun week for Josh Naylor. It's not going to be – they've called a couple guys up this year and not given them run right away. Luis Arias. I don't think that's going to be the case with Josh Naylor. I don't know whether he's going to play DH all six games. I think there's a chance for you to get Franmil Reyes off his feet. He had off-season knee surgery, and he's playing pretty much every day now. You might as well give him a game or two as DH, and then you put Naylor in the outfield. Josh Naylor is not going to wow you defensively, but Franmil Reyes isn't going to wow you defensively either. So the drop-off from Franmil to Josh Naylor is not that big. This move just made too much sense, and that's why I think the Padres made it, and I'm happy they made it for Josh's sake, because it's really cool that he gets to debut basically in his hometown.
Which is really awesome and really cool for him. And if you're going to make a guy who it depends on how the guy is wired, if he's going to make that's going to make him more comfortable or it's going to make him more stressed. Because if you have all your friends and family around you, some guys are like, oh, I feel natural, I feel at home. Other guys feel that extra pressure of, I got to get my first take, I got to get my first home run, got to do this in front of my family. So we'll see how Josh Naylor is wired when he gets to make his big league debut. You mentioned the on-base percentage. What I really like about him, and you notice it when you watch him in spring training at bats, is when he takes a pitch, you're right, he recognizes the pitch really quickly. When he knows a pitch is a ball, or he knows it's not what he's looking for, he's not one of those guys who is taking that little extra lean to take a little longer look at it. He sees it out of the hand and he just stands there. That's not me. I know I'm not swinging at that. So he really does have good pitch recognition, which is really nice. He's a good OBP guy. But let's go to the other part of that, which you mentioned, which is defense.
Yeah, it's not there.
Wow. It's because he's a first baseman by trade, right? So they put him in the outfield to start learning after they signed Eric Hosmer. And by the way, huge credit to Josh Naylor, because after they signed Eric Hosmer, he showed up at that prospect palooza the Padres have against the Rangers every year that he'd already been in. He was one of the oldest guys out there because he wanted to get more reps in the outfield. He's a baseball junkie. He wants to learn and do well at his new position. But there are physical limitations. He's not that fast, a never real great arm, probably still learning how to read balls. If you put Josh Naylor in left and you see a situation where you have Naylor in left, Will Myers in center, and Franmil Reyes in right field, has there ever been a worse defensive outfield in the history of Major League Baseball?
That's up there. I'm sure there have been worse outfields when guys get hurt and when you have to shuffle things around.
Put a pitcher in left or something like that.
Yeah,
right?
But in terms of how you're an outfield alignment that you plan to have, that's pretty bad. And I can't imagine the Padres long term ever going that direction. And it kind of leads to the question, well, I think right now Franmil Reyes is clearly – he's one of your best hitters, and he's probably your best outfielder.
You can't take him out, right.
So if you have Josh Naylor and he kind of proves himself to also be a guy you can't get out of the lineup long term, and I'm not saying he will be, as some pretty good players to jump, what do you do? What do you do with center field? Because you can't on a nightly basis run out an outfield that's that subpar defensively. The Padres have gotten by with it. They've gotten away with some shaky outfield alignments so far this season. – but it's not ideal. And there's certain pitchers you can't really do it with. I would advise not recommending ever doing it again with Matt Strom on the mound. He tends to induce some weak contact. He tends to induce a lot of fly balls. Chris Paddock, on the other hand, strikes guys out, and it's generally, I mean, he'll give up some fly balls too, but you can work around a bad outfield with a high strikeout ground ball guy.
There simply aren't as many balls in play that need to be taken by the outfield.
Yeah.
Right.
And so the Padres kind of, they'll need to evaluate going forward what they want to do, how they want to take Josh Naylor, Franmil Reyes, and say, all right, where are we going to sacrifice? Are we going to sacrifice by putting one of them on the bench, or are we going to sacrifice by trotting out an outfield defense that's not very good? Or are we going to say, you know what, when those two are in, then Manny Margot, or when Travis Jankowski's back, they're automatically in center because those guys can eat up a ton of ground,
right,
and almost make up for some of the deficiencies.
Which you need to have in a ballpark like Petco Park. You need to have in a ballpark like Coors Field, especially with as much space as out there in that ballpark. You can't just rely all the time on clubbing the other team to death. If Josh Naylor is out there and he's hitting, you know, four bombs a week and he's living up to that, then fine, live with the lack of outfield defense or the outfield range, because he's going to be more than making it up. He's going to drive in more runs and he lets in. That I don't think is going to be the case with the entirety of the outfield. We're going to have to see how that plays, but it's going to be very interesting to see what they do now with the roster, because Josh Naylor's not on the 40-man. So our speculation is probably you take either Anderson Espinoza, who we know is undergoing second Tommy John surgery. He's still on the 40-man. He's not on the 60-day disabled list yet. So you can very easily move him off. That makes room. Do we know what's going on with Aaron Loop yet? Because he just disappeared.
Yeah, I don't think we have too much clarity on him. But I mean, it's an elbow issue, so that's always trouble. So it'll be one of those guys moving to the 60-day.
So that clears
probably
spot.
Alex Dickerson onto the DL.
That'd be the 10-day injured list.
Yes,
I still call it the DL
injured
too.
List. Excuse
me. I still call it the DL too. We got
every single
43 years of calling it the DL.
If my copy on MLB.com says IL, it's because my editor changed it. Because I forget every single time.
Why'd they do that? Like, was that the big key to fix Major League Baseball? Like that's what we all needed. That now all of a sudden the game is going to be more exciting and more kids will want to play it, and you know, everybody will be paying more attention to that than whatever the hell Drake is doing on the sidelines. Make it the injured list. That's going to fix Major League Baseball and get us right back up there with the NFL.
Why not? I mean, I don't know whether the Padres are gonna if Alex Dickerson is headed to the injured list, but it looks like that's the case. And if that's the case, that's too bad for him.
Yeah,
you know,
because you can't just hide guys on the injured list. You can't do that. You have to have a reason for putting them on there, because you just don't want to make a roster move.
He missed a couple starts or a couple potential starts. He's only been up for a couple weeks.
Right.
He missed a couple, probably two opportunities where I think he would have started because of some injury that was unspecified, and I would guess we're going to find that out. That's speculation.
Man,
it's informed
so
speculation, but hopefully, I mean, when we went to Toronto a couple years ago, the last time we were in Toronto, I think it was 2016, Alex Dickerson had just come up, and he was raking, and he hit one of the most majestic home runs I've ever seen into that fifth deck. You know how Rogers Center kind of has...
Right.
Yeah, it has tiered decks.
Above the hotel.
Yeah, he hit it onto the fifth deck, and it was probably one of the coolest home runs I've ever seen. When the Padres were on that ridiculous 25-game home run streak, it'll be best to him, hopefully. Hopefully that's not the move. Hopefully there's something else we have to learn.
And I remember seeing that home run because his bat flip was pretty sweet as he was going down the line. There's not a better guy to have in here for Friar Friday than AJ, because you are with the team. You see them all the time. You are not, however, in Toronto this week, and you get to actually have some fun instead.
Yeah, I'll be going to a wedding.
Congratulations. So. No, you're not. You're already married. You're not going. It's not in Utah,
right? No, it won't
be
mine. Family friend in Denver. So I'm missing Toronto, which is one of my favorite road cities, but I'm going to Denver, which is one of my favorite road cities. So I'll take the trade-off.
They're both really fun, really cool spots. They really, especially this time of year, where you're starting to get the frost is gone. Plus, although being in Toronto right now probably wouldn't be the worst timing given what's going on in the
National
Basketball Association.
Yeah, this is going to be a Canadian heavy show, huh?
We're going heavy. We're going to start. Let's talk some hockey too, eh? We're going to start talking A's, because we can talk a lot of Canadian stuff. Hey, give us a call, 833-288-0973, 833-288-0973. I pose a question to you in the listening audience and to you, AJ Cassavell. We have Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who took about 40 at-bats to figure out big league pitching, and he's mashing everything like we thought he would. We were hoping we would see Fernando Tatis Jr. this series, just to see those two guys going against each other, and because the Padres need Fernando Tatis Jr. back in this lineup desperately. He's a difference maker in this lineup. So they're not against each other, but I'll put it to you anyway. Which one would you rather have? If you were to take one, you're going to redraft something right now. You could take this rookie class. Do you take Fernando Tatis Jr. or do you take Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? If you're starting an infield right now, which guy do you want for the next decade?
Well, there's no wrong answer. I'll start by I'll preface by saying that.
Are this it's, like, do you want the Stones or Led Zeppelin? Like, there's no wrong answer here.
Yeah, they're both complete studs who are going to dominate the game for the next decade. And I'll say it's a real bummer that Tatis isn't healthy this weekend.
Oh, it
because
sucks.
What a showcase this would have been for Major League Baseball
it
with two
sucks.
Two players who are, I mean, they're going to be perennial all-stars, legitimate superstars for a long, long time.
And they make the game exciting.
Yeah.
Like they are appointment viewing when they're at the plate.
Yeah, they both have really fun styles of play. I'm going to go with probably the pick that isn't popular here in San Diego. I think Fernando Tatis is a stud, and I think if you're going positionally, if you need a shortstop, I'll say this, Fernando Tatis fits best in San Diego because it's been... We've spent a decade here looking for a shortstop, looking for that guy to anchor it.
Since AJ Trey Turner?
Since before then. Since well before then. But, that's an example of one that got away. And now you have maybe the best young shortstop in baseball, and you have a guy playing a premier position. Fernando Tatis has a lot of value. Vladimir Guerrero is going to – he's going to have a 900 OPS every single year of his career. That's I think we're seeing the plate skills where he can do that. And I don't want this to sound like a knock on Fernando Tatis, but Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is just such an unbelievable hitter where you can put him in the middle of your – he's a generational-type talent. You can put him in the middle of your lineup and guarantee your team offensive success. He's the guy that you – not only do you pitch around, but you look at him in your lineup that night and you're scared of having to face that guy in any circumstance. And so,
with runners on base.
There's no – I don't want this to be a knock on Fernando Tatis because he is incredible in a little bit of a different way. He is five tools. He does everything.
Literally everything.
And if that's what you want and you're going to pick him, I don't begrudge that at all. I just think if I had to take one to start a franchise with, I'd go Guerrero in the slightest of margins over Fernando Tatis. Tell me I'm wrong.
I can't. That's the thing. I would go with Tatis simply because of the defensive aspect of his game. And for
AJ hates Tatis. That's basically what he said.
Exactly.
Ouch.
Hashtag AJ hates Tatis. Let's get that trending. You can't go wrong with either guy. You got a guy who is going to just wreck pitching staffs. I mean, wreck pitching staffs for the next. I mean, talking about the ball that Alex Dickerson hit, they're going to call that the Vlad deck. That's how many balls he's going to hit up there in the fifth deck at Rogers Center for as long as that guy wants to play. But he has defensive liabilities. He has defensive limitations. Tatis, plus, I mean, they're both exciting players, and they both bring in energy. But there's just something about Fernando's personality. I don't know if Vlad has the same kind of infectious, boyish charm that just pervades the entire clubhouse. When Fernando Tatis is in that clubhouse, the place, it lights up. There's something about that guy. He's got that leadership quality that even if Machado opts out after 5 years, whatever it is, even if Hosmer is gone after 5 years, you've still got this guy who is going to be the cornerstone of your entire clubhouse at the age of 25 at that point. That's the other thing that I see in him that I really, really want. Now, Vlad's going to hit for more power. He's going to have a higher OPS. He's not going to steal the bases that Tatis is going to steal. He's not going to have the same kind of defensive impact that Tatis is going to have. And for those reasons, I would go with Fernando. But I realize saying no to a guy who's going to average 40 home runs a year for the next decade. And that's a hard thing to turn your back on.
And I think what we've seen out of these guys already tells you a lot about who they're going to be because they've gotten to the major leagues. And with Fernando, there was no acclimation period. With Vlad Guerrero Jr., there was maybe like a week and a half, it felt like.
If that.
They're 20 years old.
Six in a week.
These dudes are 20. It's almost not fair to the other guys, to the other young guys who come up and struggle a little bit because that's usually what happens. And when you hold these guys as your standards, I think maybe Padre fans with Luis Urias a little bit, like when Fernando Tatis Jr. is your standard – and Luis Urias comes up and struggles, or say Josh Naylor struggles a little bit, you know what? That's fine. That doesn't mean these guys are going to be bad ball players down the road. But you have these rookies who come up and rake right away, and Acuna did it last year, and Juan Soto as well. That's not the way it's supposed to be in baseball, and it has been with three or four of these superstars, and they're just setting the bar so high. And to me, what Tatis did right away, it answered some questions I might have had about his bat. Not that I had any long-term questions about his bat, but the fact that every time he jumped a level in the minor leagues, he struggled a little bit.
It was about a month that he would kind of figure things out, and once he had that database and figured out how it went, he took off.
Yeah, there was none of that in the major leagues,
which
against the best pitchers in the world. And he swung and missed through a few pitches, and that's probably what you're going to get from Fernando Tatis. His swing's probably a little long, and that's where a lot of his power comes from.
Right.
And in the long term, it's going to work out for Fernando Tatis offensively, because he does what he does, and when he swings through a few pitches and when he strikes out a big spot, next at bat he comes up and he'll drop down a bunt at the third baseline, or he'll hit the ball 450 feet. It doesn't seem to linger with him. I don't know the temperament of Vlad Guerrero Jr. So I'm going purely off baseball skills and what I've seen and what I've read and what I've heard. But if Vlad Guerrero Jr.'s temperament isn't what Fernando Tatis Jr.'s is, then I'll take Fernando Tatis all day, because his is like a veteran already, even though he's 20 years old.
Right. He's a guy who other guys are already looking to, making big plays and making big contributions in the lineup. They get around and they're thinking, if we can turn the lineup over, we're good, because Fernando's going to be up, and that's going to mean we're getting runs. Something's going to happen. They already rely on him like they do a veteran type of ball player. That's what's so crazy about this guy. And and you're right with Luis Urias. He's 21 years old. He's 21. And we're expecting him to be Fernando Tatis Jr. or be Juan Soto or be Bryce Harper and Mike Trout from 2012. We're expecting them to be these guys. These guys are Hall of Fame talents.
Yeah.
Not mean they'll be Hall of Fame players. They're Hall of Fame talents. It used to be, if you got to the big leagues by 23, you were early. Remember that? Oh, 23 is already in the major leagues. Wow, look how early he got there. That's not the case anymore, because some of these guys are so good, so young, they're being pushed a lot harder. Probably there's a financial aspect to that too with Major League Baseball. They want these guys to get up there as quickly as possible, because then they can, they have that control factor and they can handle it. But it used to be that a team would stick a guy, okay, you play a year at A ball, you play a year at Double A, you play a year at Triple A, like that. You just did that. It didn't matter if they were ready or not. Now these teams are bringing these guys up of, do it.
If they're one of your best players,
do it.
Put them on your major league roster.
Why not?
They're
going to
help you
lumps.
Win baseball games. Put them on your roster.
Fernando
Tatis clearly did when he was healthy.
Right. Let them take their lumps. That's what they're doing with. I think they need to do more with Urias and with Mejia and with Naylor. These guys are all under the age of 24. That's what's just crazy about this.
And look at the pitching too.
Let them figure it out. Chris Paddock is 23. Eric Lauer is only 24. We forget about it because he seems like he's been around for a while and he kind of carries himself as an older guy, but that's how young these guys are. It's nuts. It's just nuts how quickly these guys are getting to the show and actually having success.
And it lines up with the Padres' long-term plan, because they've called them all up within basically the past year, and they have everyone, every big-time roster piece, aside from Craig Stammen and Kirby Yates, who are good pitchers in their own right, but they're veterans and bullpen guys are volatile. You can find bullpen help.
They're like over 30, man. Those are the guys. They might as well be dinosaurs.
Aside from those guys, though, everyone's here for 4 or 5 years.
Right.
So it's not like pretty much any team in any sport. At the end of a season, you kind of do inventory on who you're losing and how you're going to fill that void. The Padres, for 3 or 4 more years, offensively and probably in the rotation, aren't really going to have to worry about who they're losing.
Nope.
They're going to have to worry about, how do we fill the void? How do we get better? Where do we get better? Which is a huge, huge luxury that I think we're probably underrating with this Padres team and with the way AJ Preller's built it, because they know who their guys are. They're gonna learn who their guys are, and they're not gonna have to worry about losing. If Franmil Reyes broke out and he becomes one of the top sluggers in baseball, they have him for 5 more years after this year.
Right. They don't have to pay him. They don't have to extend him. They don't have to do any of that.
Everybody's here for 4 more years.
They're going to have to be. It's like the Warriors of Kevin Durant. They don't need it. It's a luxury. So they're going to, hey, my fifth starter only won 15 games with a 2.92 ERA. I wonder if there's a better option for me out there. That's what the Padres are going to be in the position of looking at. We're back on 97.3 The Fan, filling in for the coach, A.J. Cassaville from MLB.com. I'm Derek Tokerson from NBC7. Yes, you are listening and not watching us, and you're on the radio and not the TV. I get those confused sometimes a little bit because, you know, that whole other job across the street.
I hope they're not watching us.
AJ, well, there's a camera right here that I didn't even notice on top of this monitor. It's the web camera. We're probably being broadcast right now, possibly across the world. So I'm glad I wore my good hat. Let's get to the phones. Mitch from New Jersey. By the way, the number is 833-288-0973. Mitch, you want to talk about some Padres prospects? I'm assuming listening to Jim Callis from MLB Pipeline prompted this call. How you doing today?
Good morning, guys. Good show. Thanks for taking my call.
Definitely, that's definitely a Jersey accent right there. I like it. All right, what you got for us, Mitch?
I'm from Staten Island, though. But anyway, sounds like the picking six, you can't miss, like the Lakers. Like in his upcoming NBA draft, top 3-4 picks. I think we all kind of know who they're going to be. So it's looking good. I'm glad they got to bring him up, throw him in the fire. Experience is nothing replaces experience. Hunter Renfro, I wish he'd get it out, but he's kind of like a forgotten man. And I know you got a couple of free agents. You got to wait till after the draft, but maybe in July, it looks like the Nats and Mets. Without giving up the top prospects, do you think they can go get either Max or Syndergaard?
Without giving up top prospects, or no?
Yeah, they're going to have to give. Give up someone. It's not.
Give
it
up
doesn't
somebody,
have to be
but
goal.
Not a lot. But like, you know, like Max is kind of old, and he's up there in his young 30s. He still has it, but he's not going to win much. The Nats lineup is
Well, the way that Max Scherzer takes care of his body, and we've seen the workouts, we've seen the way that he goes about his craft. He is meticulous. He's got several years left. He's got probably through the end of his contract left at being an elite level pitcher. AJ, would you agree with that?
I think so. He's one of those rare contracts that you spend a lot of money, and
you get a lot of return.
You get a lot of return throughout the duration of the contract. It looks like there's still 4 years. We don't know what's going to happen, but he's halfway through the contract right now, and he has been the best pitcher in baseball.
No.
I thought he was done this year. My mistake. But bring up the young players. What you have to lose? I mean, I think the Padres can get their wild card this year.
All you have to lose is games right now.
All right, sure. But throw him in the fire. I mean, you blew up like Chris Bryant, but like guy like Michael Trout and Bryce Harper, they had no business being in the minor leagues. I thought.
Well, at the time that they were brought, remember Mike Trout had a little bit of a cup of coffee. And he was okay, and it was the next year in 2012.
His numbers in 2011 were not good.
And he came up at the end of April. They had him in the minor leagues at the start of that season.
Yeah, and the whole point, I think, is to say that sometimes that you can be a stud in the major leagues and struggle in your first month or two, because Mike Trout did, and Mike Trout's the best player. He might be the best player I've ever seen.
And he's the best player I've ever seen. I know, maybe we had to go back way back in the archive. Mitch, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it.
Yeah, have a nice
833-288-0973. That's your phone number. If you want to call in and get some. By the way, pick AJ's brain, because this guy knows more about the Padres than probably any other 20 people that you know combined. So, I mean, Mike Trout in my lifetime, I mean, it had Barry Bonds not gone on the juice, right? And he was still the 500 possible player that he was always going to look like, and he was great defensively, and he could do everything. Still was not as good as what I've seen out of Mike Trout.
I don't know about that. I think Barry Bonds is better. And those to me are the guys who, and there's a big gap between them. And I think I was watching Mike Trout a few weeks ago. I wasn't at one of the Padres series in the road, so I'm able to sit on my couch and scroll through games. And I watched a couple Mike Trout at bats, and it's just unbelievable the way he covers the whole strike zone, and yet is still disciplined enough to lay off pitches when he needs to, and if he comes up with guys on base and you have to pitch to him, he's going to do damage.
Yes,
he does things that I haven't seen since Barry Bonds, and I think his value. I think if you look at if you're going strictly based on WAR, and this is probably where WAR probably tells you it probably says it's a pretty good stat, because those are the two guys who have had, I think, three or four different 10-win seasons are Barry Bonds and Mike Trout.
When you look at the top, it's Babe Ruth, Ted Williams, you know, Hank Aaron, Barry Bonds. Those are the WAR guys. So obviously, it's not far off.
Well, yeah, and so the eye test says the exact same thing, because Barry Bonds, the season Barry Bonds had a .609 on base percentage. I forget what year that was. It was not the year he hit the 73 home runs. That's one of the best baseball seasons I've ever seen, because how do you bring more value to your team than by hitting home runs when you get pitched to and by reaching base more than 6 out of 10 times. That's absurd. And Barry Bonds did it from a corner outfield spot. Mike Trout's bringing a lot more value on the bases. He's bringing more value as a center fielder. Barry Bonds could do all those things, but younger in his career. They are, to me, head and shoulders above everyone else, the two best players I've seen. And I never thought there would be a player on the level of Barry Bonds, and Mike Trout is fast approaching it. So
Mike Trout, career 418 OBP. His on-base percentage led the league the last 4 years, 441, 442, 460, 461. He's got three consecutive seasons right now he's working on of an OPS over 1,000. That's ridiculous. And you know what the dumbest number about Mike Trout is? He's 27.
How many MVPs does he have? Two? That's not enough.
He's got two. He has never finished outside the top four in MVP voting. That's the top four. What? You know what's become like? He's become almost like LeBron James of baseball.
I think he's better.
Every year you can say, like, LeBron, he's the MVP, right? So who else can we give it to just because we can't always give it to this guy? Mike Trout's become like that in the American League. Like, he's the MVP, of course. Can somebody else please rise up and take it? Because we can't just keep giving it to the same guy all the time.
Yeah, and last year when Mookie Betts won it, Trout had a little bit of an injury in there. And mm-hmm. So I think Mookie Betts, you could make the argument that it was Mookie Betts. I would have voted for Mike Trout last year. But Mike Trout, every single year, if he's healthy and playing 155 games, is going to be the MVP. And you brought up the LeBron topic. I think an interesting discussion I've held with a few people I know is, in their respective sport, who is the most dominant at what they do? And I would make the argument that Mike Trout is the best at baseball, is better at baseball than LeBron is at basketball, or than Connor McDavid is in hockey, or than Tom Brady is in football. Or the only one that I might peg on that level would be Messi in soccer. But I think Mike Trout
is doing... Cristiano Ronaldo might have something to say about that.
Messi's a better player. But we're not going to get too deep into soccer right now. And Messi's probably the best player of all time. I don't know that Mike Trout's on that level yet. But in terms of the way he's dominating the sport right now, in this age where it's so many different things are emphasized, value of guys, the position they play, the defense they play, and the way they contribute in so many different areas, Mike Trout does it all. So I'm taking him as maybe the most dominant American athlete in terms of how good they are within their respective sport. Now, baseball's different. Baseball, you're not as valuable to your team if you're as good as Mike Trout is as you are if you're LeBron James playing basketball.
Correct, because Mike Trout's had exactly, what, one career postseason appearance?
And zero wins. Yeah. He got swept.
He's never won a postseason game, right? And by the way, he hit .083 in three games. That was a 2014 ALDS against the Royals.
He hit a dinger, though, if I remember
it
right.
It was. Yeah, he had one home run, yeah, and it was a solo shot. And but again, that you got to get more. That's the thing that people always held against Trevor Hoffman was he didn't have the postseason success that Mariano Rivera had. Mike Trout is the same kind of thing, and we all say he's the greatest player of all time, but he needs, in baseball, you need a lot more help than you need literally in any other sport. Let's go to the phones. Nick in Chula Vista. All right, Padres prospects, who do you have to invest in here, Nick? Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hey, here's the thing. Talking about nothing is better than experience. I mean, maybe to a point, but you got to invest in the youth that you have. I mean, we got plenty of examples here. Tatis Jr., would he be as good now if they threw him in, 2 years ago? Chris Paddock, another guy. Ty France, a guy that's going to be leaned on. He's going to be a stud coming up here in probably about 2 to 3 years. You know, I mean,
are they going to lean on Ty France though? Are they going to really lean on Ty France? Because he's a guy who got he's a stopgap right now.
Will they have to? No. Yeah. Will they have to? I don't think they'll have to because of the other guys coming up. But I mean, just look at the bats that the Padres have. Unfortunately, I think pitching is kind of where their shortfall is. I mean,
not in the system. In the system, they got arms. They got arms on top of arms.
Right, but they're investing in them. Right, they're down in the minor leagues. They're working on. They're developing, honing their craft is where it's at, and that's where it's going to pay off. But if they just tried putting dudes in the rotation now, that's not going to do it for you.
Yeah, that's true to an extent. But when the guys are ready and when they're close enough to being ready, there's something to be said about pushing them in the deep end and saying, hey, here's what major league hitters have. Here's how your stuff plays against them. Go learn how it works, how your stuff is against them. I think spring training, that's a big deal with what they got Logan Allen and Cal Quantrill and Nick Margavichus, the experience against those big league hitters. To an extent, you want to kind of limit a guy's exposure when they're not ready, but there's also value to be gained from letting him face big league pitching or big league hitting.
I remember even Derek Jeter came up and Mariano Rivera came up and they got knocked around and they had to go back down to the minor leagues and make adjustments. They didn't get up and stick and stay just because they were them. They had to learn how to, the major leagues work and then go back down and hone their craft and then come up and be Hall of Famers.
Well, I think Margavichus is a person just recently going to have to do that, right? But if you beat up somebody's confidence level, you have no choice but to send them back down, let them get it right back, and then you can bring them in. Because I was there at the game the other day. He was it was the first three innings. It was not very good, right? So
against the Pirates, right? He got beat up pretty good.
Yes. Yeah. So if you let someone's confidence level get beat up and that's just as bad as a player in a slump that their mind's on the numbers, their mind's on, I got to get on base rather than just sticking with what they know, waiting for their pitch. I think that's just where it's at. So he's probably a perfect example of coming in and then going back down.
Awesome. Hey, Nick, you bring up a good point here. I got to let you go here. We got to get to a couple of breaks and a traffic stop here, but thank you for the call. And he brings up an interesting point here, AJ, and I want to get to this with you after the break. You mentioned confidence being beaten around. How much of that is in the wiring of the guys individually, and how much of that is something that the Padres are really trying to look at? You hear makeup. Makeup is talked about a lot, and now we're going to see what kind of makeup Nick Margavichus has. We're going to see what kind of makeup Cal Quantrill has. How much of that is in an individual guy? You know you can push him because you know he's going to be okay if he does get knocked around and have to go back down. And how much of the Padres are actually scouting that actively?
Very actively. And I think there's two sides to the coin. Nick Margavich's confidence might be knocked down a little bit because of his last three starts. But, I mean, it had to go up several pegs based on his first month. He was a lot better than a lot of people expected. So the experience, you can't replace the experience. And now the Padres have an idea of what they have. And that's I think, a big part of the equation.
And we're having really fun conversation in here that we'll kind of try to get to a little bit later on about whether or not Babe Ruth would suck if he played today. But we're going to get to the NBA here in a second. But just to finish on the topic we were talking about before we hit the break, we know that makeup's a big deal, and Nick Margavich has obviously had his confidence tested, and now he's going back down the minor leagues, and now it's going to be up to the guy, which one do you take from this? Do you take from, hey, I got big league hitters out, or hey, I got knocked around at the big league level? So that's a makeup thing. So how much are the Padres looking at makeup as much as they can? Because you can't get to know these guys completely when they're drafting and signing these young players.
Very heavily. And you talk to their scouting department and the guys who pick these guys, that's usually one of the first things they mention about the guy when maybe we're most interested in Mackenzie Gore's ridiculous ERA or his fastball or the way his breaking pitches move. They say, you know what, this kid's got what it takes. And when you're evaluating 18-year-olds and how they're going to project when they're 25, that's an important aspect of it because they're not at 18 going to be that they're not a major league pitcher yet, and you need to know that they're going to work and do the things necessary to become a major league pitcher. And the Padres have picked guys who have those attributes in the last few drafts. That's why I think they have the most guys under AJ Preller since he came on board. They have the most guys from the draft to be on the active roster right now of any team in baseball. A lot of them are pitchers too.
Yeah.
And so with Margavichus, you send him down. It's not so much, hey, go back and get your confidence. It's, hey, you need to go back and get your confidence because
right,
we have a lot of good young arms. And if you're going to be rattled by a couple bad starts, well, there's not a place for you because we have a deep enough group of pitching prospects who can come up and take that spot. And I don't think Margavichus will be rattled by a couple rough starts. He's the first, he was, I think, the second guy from the 2017 draft class to reach the big leagues.
Right.
It takes some mental fortitude to get where he is when he was at a low round pick out of Rider. And he's shown it before. And I would, if I had to guess, what's going to get him is not going to be his makeup.
Right.
It would be the fact that his fastball's in the high 80s.
Right. That he can touch 90 every now and again. He needs to remember, you got to locate that thing. You're going to be at the major league level. You need to locate that thing or you are going to get hurt, and you're going to get hurt often. When he was locating, he was very effective. When he was not, he got knocked around in a big, bad way. And that's one thing that, Ryan Weathers, this guy talked about makeup, just talking to that guy when he first got drafted and came over here. This kid's mature beyond his years. You know, you see guys like that. Those are the kinds of guys that the Padres are drafting. All right, so we're going to pivot and switch gears a little bit here because a ton of stuff happened in the NBA last night. And I think like fourth or fifth on the list is the fact that the Raptors won a basketball game. Because there's so much noise and stuff that goes along with the NBA these days. I can't even begin to follow it all. Jim Russell is sending some emails and all that stuff last night. And Jim, you're in here. I want you. You're probably the younger guy in the room here. So, what's going
Crap,
on?
I
with,
am.
What's going on with Drake?
Is that true?
I think I'm the youngest.
I'm 43.
30.
Ooh.
Wow.
Okay.
You darn kids. Okay, so you guys are gonna have to.
February.
I'm gonna fall.
March.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, that
so,
makes
okay.
me the youngest.
You're the youngest.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I'm old.
You are old, Jeff.
Wow. Jeff, how old are you?
30. But I'm October, so I'm ahead of Jim.
So you're the youngest,
AJ.
Then.
No, I'm the oldest. I'm older. Well, not older, but older than those two. Because I'm October before.
Oh, the year before.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
like I'm
not,
30,
not
so,
okay,
yeah.
Gotcha. So you're getting.
So let's talk okay. NBA. Okay. And how do we talk NBA these days? But we start with Drake, right?
We start. Yeah, you have to start with Drake, all right? Because Drake's apparently got a beef now with the Bucks owner's daughter. That's a sentence I never thought I would say, like ever. All right, so Mallory Edens is the owner of the Bucks' daughters, right? Bucks' daughter. She was wearing a Pusha T t-shirt last night, sitting directly next to Aaron Rodgers on the sidelines at the Bucks game. By the way, the Raptors, in case you're curious about the actual NBA, the Raptors won the game. They've won three in a row since Paul Pierce said the Bucks got this. So Paul Pierce needs to never be an analyst ever again because he just jinxes everything that he touches. Raptors have a 3-2 lead. Kawhi Leonard, Aztec for life, he might have played the best game of his professional basketball career. Darn near had a triple-double. He had hit five shots from three-point range. He was just destroying Milwaukee in the second half of that game. Kawhi, he's making himself a lot of money right now. I think he's playing better right now than he was when he was the finals MVP. That's how good a game he's playing right now. But everyone wants to talk about what's going on with the sidelines, what's going on with Drake, and then the beef with the guy on the shirt of the daughter of the Bucks owner. And you guys take it from here. I'm going to check out and see if I can figure out what the hell is happening.
Well, I don't know if I don't even know if I can figure it out. But what I'll say is to kind of like this Drake sideline stuff. I'm totally fine with it. I just don't think we have to make as big a deal of it as we have, and here we are talking about it.
Because it's become a thing, and now we have to address it.
Sure. But Drake's an excited fan who just happens to be famous. The story was what happened on the floor last night, and
We'd like to think that.
I think Kawhi Leonard, maybe this was this could have been his defining game of his career so far. He won. He was really good, obviously, in the 2014 finals. Mm-hmm. He won Game 7 with that crazy shot, and he played really well in that game, too. He had 40-something points. But his efficiency last night and nuts. The way the Raptors needed him to step up in the biggest moment of their season in hostile territory, and the fact that he had 9 assists, and he's not a guy who's been an assist-heavy guy in his career. He did everything the Raptors could have possibly needed from him, and the only way they're winning that game against a good Bucks team, who I think we have some questions maybe about Giannis now, not to say he's not an elite player, but getting it done in Game 5 at home is something that you'd expect him to do.
He's not there yet.
But
right.
But Kawhi Leonard kind of stepped into that upper echelon of guys who come through in the biggest games, because make no mistake, this was a huge game for the Raptors, the whole entire city of Toronto, for Kawhi in terms of his legacy. Not that his legacy would ever be tarnished because of what he's already done, but the fact that he took another step forward.
Look at the end of his San Antonio Spurs career. People in San Antonio have got to be feeling horrible right now because they're thinking that he was hurt. He got into it with Greg Popovich. He did. They were not seeing eye to eye. There was a big fallout, and he ends up in Toronto. Spurs fans right now are going, wait a minute, you're doing this now? We thought you were shot. We thought your body was out.
I think he is hurt. It, like some of the things we've seen in these playoffs, it looks like he's almost playing hurt a little bit. He's
in moments.
He's come up hobbled a couple times, and he keeps playing through them. And, he might be one of the more underappreciated superstars in the NBA just because he's so consistent in everything he does. When you're ranking the best players in basketball, and I don't mean who had the best seasons. I think we can agree, or I don't know, I haven't asked you about this, but I think Giannis is probably the MVP based on what he did during the regular season.
His numbers are absurd,
and when you play the Bucks, you have to focus everything on him, and he creates things for everyone else. He was the MVP of the regular season. That doesn't necessarily mean that if we were picking a tournament and we were heading into a round robin right now with a 16-team playoff, that Giannis would be the first pick in that draft.
No.
And Kawhi Leonard is right up there in terms of who you might pick.
Kawhi's done it.
He's unbelievable in all aspects, in every aspect. And now he's kind of added passing to his game. I mean, he was never bad on that aspect before, but he can facilitate things too on top of being a scorer, being a penetrator, being a shooter, being able to play defense, elite level defense. To me, last night was kind of a statement game for Kawhi Leonard. Not that he needed one, just to remind us of how good he really is when he kind of gets lost in the shuffle because he's not the most outspoken guy.
Correct. No, he's not. He's not on the all interview team. We'll go ahead and say that. He's a guy who was, I mean, you wouldn't even know he was at a press conference if he hadn't laughed at some point.
Do you love using all of the latest and greatest innovations? You can listen to The Fan on your smart speaker. Just say, okay, Google, play 97.3 The Fan.
Streaming 97.3 The Fan from radio.com.
I think people think these athletes
use Google Home to listen to 97.3 The Fan.
Are you ready to find out what's going on with the Padres?
They love it. They love it. And what's not to love?
Let's go right to the source. It's the Padres Management Report on Friar Friday. Right here on your home of the Padres.
Colonel, we got to throw a star.
97.3 The Fan.
And we're going to talk to Skip Schumacher, the first base coach. And Skip is an outfield coach, outfield instructor, outfield connoisseur. You oversee all things outfield. What's your official title on that?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head right there. I'll just take any of those. That works for me.
Take all of them. Since we just talked about this real quick, totally off topic, what's your favorite fried fair food you've ever had?
You know, it's funny. I'm not a huge fried food guy, but I did have a fried Snickers at the Orange County Fair. They can fry anything at those places. And that was, didn't know what I was going to get myself into, but it was actually pretty amazing.
Yeah, I had a fried s'more one time, and I was thinking, how in the world did you? Oh, no, it was dangerously good. All right, speaking of dangerously good, let's start in the corner outfield right there. Franmil Reyes, I mean, that guy has been dangerously good with his bat. We knew, we were hoping he was going to be a guy who would be able to be productive in the lineup. He's really acquitted himself well in the outfield defensively. He has not been a liability. He's not going to be mistaken for, you know, Roberto Clemente out there. But can you talk about the progress that he's made as a defensive outfielder and how it's also helping keep his bat in the lineup, which obviously plays at the big league level?
Yeah, first of all, I don't think there's another guy that we want up to bat in a crucial situation more than Franmil Reyes. That just shows you where he's come from and his growth as a professional player and a professional hitter. He tends to put the barrel at more than anybody, almost in the major league. So it's just been so much fun watching him grow as a player throughout the minor leagues and now at the big league level. Now in the outfield, nobody works harder than Franmil. He's out there early around 1 o'clock with the strength and conditioning guys, getting him prepared, get his body right, get it going. Then he goes through his, you know, hitting routine. Then we go through our outfield routine. Where should we play? Adjustments according to, you know, where we think he should play as far as depth wise. We feel like, you know, having him a little bit further back maybe can eliminate the extra base hit. And keep the, you know, doubles into singles, the triples into doubles, and give our pitchers a chance, you know, to maybe get a double play the next time up.
Yeah, he's doing that. We've seen Will Myers doing that quite a bit too, moving back just a little bit, just avoid the extra base. It's almost like playing a constant no doubles type of defense. By the way, it's Skip Schumacher joining us on the SDCCU Fan Hotline for Friar Fridays. So you got a new piece coming up this weekend. Josh Naylor is going to be joining the Padres, making his big league debut. I mean, it's awesome for this kid to be able to do it basically in his hometown in Toronto. He's from Ontario, 21 years old. You got to see a lot of him during spring training. What can we hopefully expect to see from Josh Naylor? We know he's going to probably hit. He's a good left-handed bat. He's got a good eye at the plate. He's just still learning really how to play the corner outfield spot. From what you saw again during spring training and Cactus League play, how is he going to be when he goes out there, probably playing left field or right field up in Toronto?
Yeah, just another exciting player coming up through the system. You know, a real professional bat at 21 years old. You know, I'll believe it when I see it when he actually enters the clubhouse. But I'm anticipating him being there just with all the reports. But super excited, another professional bat, kind of a Framil Reyes just on the other side. He walks more than he strikes out, or just you know, pretty even throughout his minor league career. His you know, bat to ball skills are you know as good as anybody's. The outfield's gonna be, it's still a work in progress. That's just what it is, just because of the adjustment he's had to make from being from a first baseman his entire life to going into the outfield. But the thing about Josh is he's so athletic. He's sneaky fast. He has a great arm. It's just, you know, getting reps out there. And that's why he went down to AAA to get the reps and repetition, you know, live games, live speed, game speed type situations, not just fly balls off a machine. But there's going to be constant work, just like with Framil Reyes, and to get him to be an average to above average major league outfielder. But the bat plays, it's going to be an exciting time to see him and Tatis and all these young guys in the middle of the order around, you know, guys like Machado and Hosmer.
You mentioned the strikeout-to-walk ratio. I mean, right now, so far in a Triple-A season, he's got 24 walks and 24 strikeouts, which is incredible for anybody, but he's also hitting for power. I mean, he's got double-digit home runs. In today's game, how rare is it to see anybody, really, let alone a 21-year-old kid who has that kind of plate discipline, that kind of ability to not swing and miss and also hit for power? It seems to be a rare combination you don't see a whole heck of a lot of right now in the modern day of launch-angle baseball.
Yeah, you really don't, and it's tough because, you know, the minor leagues are the minor leagues, and the big leagues are the big leagues for a reason. So, you know, we'll see what happens as far as, you know, the transition from these kids coming up, and there's going to be adjustments. But typically when you see a guy like that have, you know, the strikeout-to-walk ratio in the minor leagues, that's going to be pretty consistent with what their major league career hopefully is going to be like. You just don't see it. I mean, you see it throughout the major leagues. Teams are going to strike out, you know, 15 times a night and have three or four walks. That's just the reality of it. But, you know, if you can get on base and Naylor can get on base and just kind of pass the baton, and then if you throw one in the strike zone and he has the ability to hit out of the ballpark, those guys are rare. And that's why we're so excited about having Josh Naylor come up and really make an impact in our lineup.
Who's been the guy that has surprised you in a pleasant way most so far this year?
Well, I mean, I think there's a few guys. I think, you know, Greg Garcia has been a huge plus off the bench, you know, just being that consummate professional, you know, having those spot starts and coming in and, you know, leading off here and there and really being a spark plug has been a real, you know, pleasant surprise for me. Austin Hedges defensively has really taken a step in the right direction and, you know, for me, probably the best defensive catcher in the game. No doubt about it. And then obviously, you know, on the other side of the ball, Kirby Yates. I mean, my goodness, it just feels like he's Aroldis Chapman when I was playing with the Reds, just like when it's the ninth inning, the game's over. And that's such a nice weapon to have in the bullpen. The obvious answer, which everyone is going to say, is Tatis. We didn't know he's going to be this great this soon. Well, at least I didn't. I knew he was going to be good. But, I mean, the guy is, for me, a top 10 player in all of Major League Baseball. And so I'm just looking forward to having him come back.
All right, let's talk about what goes on at first base. Because when you're first base coach, you kind of get almost lost in the shuffle over there. Because you got, you know, Glenn's over there, and he's been doing it for a long time. He's giving the signs. He's waving guys through. He's giving them stop signs. So as from a first base coach perspective, there's a lot more that goes into that spot than a lot of people realize. Now, do you have the stopwatch out there, your time and moves, or what are you telling the guys when they get to first base? What exactly is it that you are tasked with doing on a daily basis? So fans don't think you're basically there just to take the batting gloves and whatever guards the guys are handing over after a single or a walk.
Right. It used to be more of that that way as a first base coach, for sure, of just taking the arm guards, and nowadays everyone has three of them. But the main thing is to give the guys an idea of what to look for just in case the ball's put in play, because there's just a million things going on. There's a lot of pressure, anxiety with the player on the bases, and they don't want to get thrown out. Just knowing the situation. Griff Benedict and I, the bullpen coach for us, we go over every reliever and starting pitcher that day to pick up kind of some tendencies on what the pitcher is trying to do in certain counts, whether or not that's a good time to steal, hit and run, you know, read a ball in the dirt on breaking ball percentages and this count. what to look for every single pitch. And so that's why I go up to him, to the player at first base after every single pitch, and give him an idea what to look for just in case a certain scenario happens, just on all the reports that we've been given in the video that we've looked at. So it's basically just trying to be another voice to calm them down and to have them be ready for anything that comes their way.
Padres first base and outfield coach Skip Schumacher joining us here on the SDCCU Fan Hotline on Friar Friday. Shifts. I'd imagine if you're over there, you have to constantly be looking at shifts nowadays, because even a couple years ago, if a runner was on base, it kind of neutralized shifting. Teams nowadays, they don't seem to care about that all that much. They're still going to put their defense in a certain position. So how much do you have to be cognizant of where the defense is when you are giving your instructions to the guy who is at first base and telling him you can run here, you can't run here, watch out for the second baseman who's actually playing third base because the shortstop is standing in left center field? How much are you constantly keeping an eye on where the heck is everybody?
Yeah, isn't it amazing with how the game has changed? There is a lot of factors go into this. Whether a guy spin moves or not at second base because the shortstop is now standing behind second base, giving them heads up on that, whether they rotate or not, who rotates, if a ball's hitting the gap or if a ball's just hit, you know, line drive to left field or to center field, who is rotating to third if they get there late. Can you steal third and beat the guy that's playing, shortstop now if he's now a third baseman? You know, can he get there in time if you delay steal? Just certain things like that. I mean, we had Travis Jankowski, Manny Margot last year. Can't wait till Travis gets back, but usually that third baseman will play in the hole on a shift, and if you can delay steal once the third baseman takes his eyes off the runner at second, usually Travis could beat him at third. Just certain things like that, finding out how far these guys are shifted and if we can take advantage of them or not.
Now, you were with the Padres as a player in spring training just a couple of years ago, and then you almost immediately jumped into the coaching ranks. Is coaching something you've kind of always had in the back of your mind you wanted to do, or was that opportunity presented to you and you kind of went, oh, you know what, I'll take it and run with it?
Yeah, I think it was a combination. This game was always super hard for me. I didn't have this extreme talent where I could just wake up and go to the field and I was just going to, throw out two hits and, make a catch and diving catch in the outfield. It was extremely hard. So I had to be ultimately more prepared than anybody on the field. And because of that, I learned so much from the coaches. And I was very lucky to have Tony La Russa and Dave McKay, who's now with Arizona. Gosh, I think this is his 40th year as a first base coach. And I just sat and learned on days that I didn't play. I just would dissect and ask questions from, really good players and really good coaches. And I felt like I could give something back to a lot of these young kids. And I guess they saw that early, that I could help impact, kind of the minor league system when I was first the kind of a special assistant to A.J. Preller the first couple of years, and knew that I was only about an hour away from San Diego. And Andy asked me if I was interested in coaching, and obviously, it's tough to turn down a league job. I've been super blessed to, just jump right into the major leagues and not have to go through the minor leagues. I don't lose sight of that ever. And so that's just kind of how it transpired. But just been really fortunate in my career to jump from the, the big leagues playing wise to the big leagues coaching wise in a hurry.
And it's one thing, though, to understand the game and to know it. It's another thing, though, to be able to teach it. Teaching is a very different thing. I remember John Elway saying one time, the reason he went into the front office and not into coaching was because he's so talented, he can't explain the things he does to a young quarterback. They were just intrinsic to him. He just went out and did stuff, and there's no way that he could show someone else how to do it. Ken Griffey Jr. can't teach his swing to somebody. That's just God-given. When did you realize you had the ability to take the concepts of the game and teach them in a way that would be easily digestible to guys and help them become better ball players? Because that's a talent in and of itself.
It really is. And, Mark McGwire was really good at that, for me when I was coming up through the system. The game never came easy for me, so I never felt like Ken Griffey. Never once in my whole career did I feel like Ken Griffey Jr. at the plate. So I think I had an idea of what it took, guys, give me ideas, and then I could give that to others as my career, as I became a veteran player, and it just worked out that way. But, the good thing we have here is we have a lot of young kids that are still impressionable. So you can make an impact on these on Josh Naylor, who's 21 years old, who just can't wait to get information, or Framil Reyes, who's 23, 24 years old, who can't wait to get information. You know, you go to a lot of these, you know, veteran teams, they already know, you know, what it takes to be a big leaguer and, you know, how to perform. So that's a little bit more difficult situation to come in and to coach, where for me, it was just fortunate to have a young team still developing at the major league level and still have a chance to impact them as they go and move forward in their careers.
Skip Schumacher, the Padres first base coach and outfield coach, joining us on the SDCCU fan hotline on Friar Fridays. Quickly, Skip, let's get quickly to this weekend. You got a couple of opponents on the road that you don't know a whole lot about. You don't see the Blue Jays often. You don't see the Yankees often. You mentioned the scouting reports and things that you have to go through earlier. I'd imagine it's a lot easier when you're facing the Giants, Dodgers, Diamondbacks, Rockies, teams you see all the time versus teams you see maybe every couple of years or so. How much extra work have you been putting in trying to make sure you know what these teams' tendencies are and what they like to do?
Yeah, a lot of extra work. You know, luckily we had an off day yesterday. We had to go through the whole bullpen as I was eating breakfast for a few hours and just trying to figure out their tips and tendencies and how we can take advantage of them. I'll go early around 12:30, about a half hour from now, and just walk the outfield. I'll take ground balls myself to see what the turf does, if it snakes or not. I'll hit balls against the fences to see how they rebound for our base runners and our outfielders to show them, you know, if it hits here, it's going to kick one way or the other. So it's not only just the team and the personnel, but it's also the stadium. You know, is it going to be open or closed dome? You know, as we get there, are you going to be able to see? Sometimes you can't see with the dome if it's, you know, the color-wise. So there's just a lot of factors, not only the personnel, but the actual stadium-wise when you get to a new place like this.
It's the little things, folks, and the coaches are always looking at the little things so they can tell the players and the players can focus on going about their business. Skip, awesome conversation. I appreciate it. I appreciate all the insight.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. Thanks, Skip. Skip Schumacher, folks, on the SDCCU Fan Hotline.
That was Best of Coach, 5-9, mornings, right here on 97.3 The Fan.
Oh, it's such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.